And welcome to Focus on the Delaware Valley. I'm Laura Lewis, and with us today we have the Director of the Delaware Division of Public Health with us, Carol Thomas Ratté, MD, MS, and welcome back.
Thank you so much for having me.
It has been a long time, and so a lot has happened since you last sat down with me. And one of those things is COVID-19. And so today's show, we're going to talk about, where we stand in the state of Delaware right now with COVID. Do you want to give us a little bit of an overview about how we are handling it as of now, beginning of March?
Yeah, thanks for that question. I think most people know that we had our highest peak in late November. Really, we peaked in December. Cases started to come down in January, which was great. I mean, we went to a high of somewhere around 470 hospitalizations, and we're now down to about 150, 60 in that range, which is great. But I think it's important for people to know that we've kind of plateaued at this point. In the last couple of weeks, our case rates have begun to level off. And we still have pretty high case rates, so much higher than what we had during the summertime. And that is cause for caution and some concern. We know we have some of the variant or mutated strains circulating in Delaware. And the one that we have seen, the UK variant, is more contagious. And so, you know, we have a lot of reason to be concerned that we could start seeing an increase again as we have more of that strain circulating. And, you know, I've seen it with my own eyes. People are really letting their guard down. We're seeing not the same adherence to mask wearing, some more gatherings again. And so now is not the time to let our guard down for sure.
Well, it sounds like we listened in December. If we had a spike after Thanksgiving, but we didn't do it in January, we did listen about our holiday gatherings there. But so now we're starting to let things go again. Let's talk percentages. In Delaware, did we have, considering the population, did we have a high rate of infection out of per 1,000 or per 100?
Yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, we're somewhere in the middle of states. We had moments when we were, you know, one of the states with the highest rates, and we had moments when we were one of the states with the lower rates. So there was certainly some variability. While other states were spiking in the summertime, you know, we were doing quite well. You know, at the end of the day, at least where we are now, we're somewhere in the middle of the pack as far as states go for case rates, hospitalizations, and deaths.
Well, do you want to talk about what should we be doing right now then? If you're worried that we are getting lax, what is the health department recommending at this time for us to be doing?
Yeah, I mean, just don't let your guard down. Mask wearing, we now know from the science, mask wearing is probably the most important thing that we can do. And we have more science now that is really has, you know, folks have been looking at masks and to see, you know, what masks are more effective. And I think the most important message here is wear a mask when you're around, you know, anyone outside of your household. Wear a mask that fits snugly around your mouth, around your face. Make sure your nose is covered. You know, some people are wearing two masks. If you have a good mask that's multiple layers, and again, you know, covers your mouth and nose snugly, then you should be fine. But just make sure you're wearing that mask. That's the most important thing. Gatherings, social gatherings, that's where we see so much spread when, especially, you know, people are dining together or, you know, drinking beverages together. the things that we all love to do, socializing together, right? That's when we really see our clusters of spread. And so, again, we just, you know, we really so strongly advise mask wearing, stay distant from people as much as possible. Really try to avoid those social gatherings. Ventilation, indoor ventilation really is key. And thank goodness we're, you know, headed towards spring now, where hopefully we'll be able to spend more time outside. But indoor activities is a real risk. So, you know, it's the same message as we've been talking about for a while. A little bit more science to inform some of the specifics of it, but those mitigation strategies, those messages haven't changed, even though our rates are a little bit lower and few more people are getting vaccinated. It's still so important.
Well, we're going to talk about vaccination, but can we return to masks? Because I wear the disposable blue guys that come, you know, a box of them, and like 1,000 to that, the disposable kind. I see others wearing them from some trendy shop. When you look for a mask, I mean, are disposable masks okay? And when you buy a mask at a retail shop, is there anything that you really do want to look for and make sure that it has?
Yeah, great question. The most important thing about these masks is you do want a tight fit. And so with the disposable masks, you often don't see a tight fit like around the sides of your mouth, but you can tie them if you put a knot close to the mask itself. And then loop it around your ear, that can make a big difference in helping it to fit more snugly around your mouth. So, you know, those disposable masks are fine. My kids like to wear them too. It's just you want to make sure that that it is tight around your face. You know, some of the designer masks out there that you can get, you want to make sure that it's at least two, if not three layers. And you can typically feel, you know, the layers, if you kind of pull at the mask, you can tell if there's at least two, if not three layers. So you want multiple layers. If you don't have a tight fit, or if you don't have multiple layers, you should double mask. If you're in a high risk situation, you should either wear, you know, like an N95 mask. Healthcare workers do, and they're fitted for those especially. But if you're like going to be on an airplane or something like that, I recommend, you know, two masks just to make sure you're well protected.
I still see people out wearing the vented masks, the ones that have that round vent in them. And now those things are not helping anybody, are they?
No, well, they're only helping the person who's wearing them. They're not helping everyone around them, because you're exhaling and those vesicles are coming out. So if you have COVID and you're wearing one of those, it's almost as though you don't have a mask on. The others are the gaiters, which, you know, a lot of people like the gaiters because they're convenient. You know, is on your neck and then you just pull it up. But those are in general like a one layer of Lycra. And those don't work very well. I'll tell you one thing that is helpful to know if your mask works is light a candle, put your mask on, and blow it out, or blow the candle. See if you can blow it out. If you can't blow it out, then you're doing well. If you can blow it out, then that mask is not effective.
A simple trick that I wish someone had told us a long time ago. And, you know, the other one was that when this all began, it was wash your hands and cover your mouth. And it was all about protecting others. We just started the message that you're protecting yourself by wearing a mask. I bet a lot of people would have started wearing them earlier if they had known that.
Yeah, I do agree. You know, we're often balancing between what the science tells us with certainty and what common sense says, right? So common sense says if you're wearing a mask, you're going to be offering yourself some protection. How much, you know, we didn't know for sure. Now we know, you know, you offer significant protection to yourself by wearing a well-fitting mask.
What about when we're out in restaurants and or we're going back to a school or a meeting situation? Because a lot of offices are back now. Is there any general rule of thumb about sharing office space, and how does it transmit? It seems like we get different information all the time. Sometimes hard plastic, sometimes cloth. This, that. We don't seem to have a good handle, the general public, I should say, on exactly how it does spread.
Yeah, that's a really great question, and I do think that we, there are strategies that are much more effective than others. So, for example, a lot of people focused on cleaning tables and cleaning chairs, and it's not to say that that doesn't help, but it's spread. It's a respiratory virus, so it's really spread from one person's, mouth and nose to another person's mouth and nose. And most all of the spread is happening that way. If you are more than 6 feet away from somebody, you're less likely to get those vesicles from them, into your mouth, nose, or eyes. If you are wearing a mask and they are wearing a mask, and it's well fitting, you're almost assured that it's not going to spread from one person to another, especially if you're 6 feet apart. Ventilation is important too. So although 6 feet matters, and it matters a lot, there are some indoor settings in which, where ventilation isn't good for a variety of reasons, maybe older buildings, places where it's just more densely populated. Gyms can be more of a risk because people are forcefully exhaling. We've seen choir outbreaks, same thing. If you have a setting that's not well ventilated, it can go beyond the 6 feet. And so that's why we emphasize ventilation more so. So, when I talk about what's most important, mask wearing is most important, social distancing, ventilation is really, really important. And then still that guidance, if you're not feeling well, you should certainly stay home. But now we know with this virus, about 50% of people who spread it are people who don't have symptoms. That's one of the things that really has made this virus so much more challenging.
And that's going to play into myths about the vaccination, too. People can get a vaccination and already have the infection.
Yeah, well, so this is an interesting thing about this virus as well. We've seen a lot of people now become reinfected. And so if you have had COVID, I think early on people were hoping that meant a hall pass or a passport or something that says I don't have to social distance or mask wear anymore. And it appears that your immune system may only be protecting you for about 100 days or so. Now, that's variable from one person to another. But just because you've had the virus doesn't mean you're not going to get it again. And so that's why we recommend vaccination for everybody, regardless of whether you've had COVID before or not.
If you're just joining us, this is Focus on the Delaware Valley, and I'm Laura Lewis. With us today, Dr. Carol Thomas-Ratté. She is director of the Delaware Division of Public Health. And there are a lot of websites through the state that have information, but the easiest thing to do is just go to coronavirus.delaware.gov, and that's so easy. Just go coronavirus.delaware and go to the gov, okay? And you will find more information there about all that we are talking about today and far more. And so now let's talk about the state's efforts in vaccinating. Give us an update. What is going on as of this time? Because things change daily, we know.
Yeah. So, I will say the last couple of months have been, I think, some of the most challenging and stressful for many, many people in our state as it relates to the vaccine. But to back up a little, we now have three extremely effective vaccines, which is just, science at its best. I mean, it's really remarkable that we have three vaccines that are so extremely effective. All three, Pfizer, Moderna, and Johnson & Johnson, 100% effective in protecting people against death and hospitalization. I mean, that is so far exceeded our expectations for vaccines. So I think that's the number one thing I sometimes have to remind myself in the midst of the stress of this. You know, we got our first shipment of vaccine December 15th, and supply of the vaccine has been completely inadequate from the beginning. We knew it would be. I mean, we've been through this experience before, like with swine flu. It takes a while to get the supply that is needed, but inadequate supply has caused a lot of anxiety among Delawareans. And so it might be helpful if I talk a little bit about kind of the strategy to phase in the rollout of the vaccine.
Go for it.
Yeah. So we don't make up these this way of thinking as far as the phases. There's a federal committee called ACIP that's been working very hard for many, many months, including just over this past weekend around the Johnson & Johnson vaccine. They have, you know, they really look at the ethics of vaccine rollout. We've all been very focused on how do we save the most lives as quickly as possible? How do we prevent the most hospitalizations as quickly as possible? And how do we roll this out in a way that's fair for everyone, knowing that there are some populations that may have greater challenges in accessing vaccine than others? So that has been, you know, largely the way that this is rolled out. The ACIP makes its recommendation. We have a Delaware Ethics Committee that then, you know, discusses the ACIP recommendations and then makes recommendations to us. And we've largely followed those federal recommendations in our state. We started with healthcare workers. Very, very important, especially in December and January, when we were at the peak of hospitalization, when we don't have an adequate workforce for healthcare, that is extremely problematic. We can't take care of patients if we don't have the workforce that we need. So we rolled it out first by protecting our healthcare workforce. Also, many of our deaths were, unfortunately, individuals who live in long-term care facilities. So it's very important to offer vaccine to long-term care residents. 80% whom have taken the vaccine, which is really outstanding, as well as long-term care staff who, not intentionally, but are often the ones who unfortunately end up kind of introducing the virus to the long-term care facilities. Also, first responders who have a healthcare role are key to protect as well. So that was 1A. On January 20th, we began to roll out 1B. 1B, we have really focused as a state on our citizens who are 65 years old and older. That is the group of individuals who are most likely to have the worst consequences. 80% of our deaths in Delaware were individuals who are 65 and older, and of course, many of our hospitalizations as well. And so, different than some states, we have really focused on our senior citizens and getting vaccine to our senior citizens through a variety of different approaches. There's also a workforce component to 1B. So teachers, we want to make sure that teachers are protected because they are providing services, critical essential services to individuals sometimes not masked, as well as childcare providers who have throughout this entire pandemic have continued to provide to teach our young children, who many of them are not able to wear masks. So that's where we have started. But now Now we just finished a hump over the last couple of weeks where we've gotten second doses into a lot of our folks in 1B who got first doses in January. And now we are really ready to roll out a lot more vaccine to our senior citizens and to more of our critical 1B workforce. So for those who've been anxiously awaiting in the 1B category, we're hoping in the next couple of weeks that you you get your opportunity to get vaccinated. And then we'll move into category or phase 1C.
You know, you mentioning the second dose, and I know that the state is actually made an order that if you provide the first dose, then you do the second dose, and making sure that people do get that second dose. And that's the Pfizer, correct? But now there are three different vaccines available. If you have the opportunity to choose, is there a difference between them and who should take which and what?
Yeah, great question. So they're all three great vaccines. And, you know, two of them are two doses. So Pfizer and Moderna are two dose vaccines. And Johnson & Johnson is one dose of a vaccine, which, you know, is really convenient for people to just have one dose and not have to worry about the second dose. Again, they're all very effective, 100% effective against death and hospitalization. For Johnson & Johnson, its effectiveness was a little bit lower against the mild or moderate infection at 72% versus 94%. But again, that's still a great response. And our recommendation is you should take the first vaccine that is available to you. That being said, we feel it's important that people know, for example, one vaccine site or another, what type of vaccine that they're offering. You know, we want the public to be aware. We've just put a new fact sheet on our website that compares the three different vaccines. And we want people to know what the difference is. And, you know, if they have a strong feeling about a one-dose vaccine versus a two-dose vaccine, or they feel like they really want that 94% of the two-dose vaccines, we want people to know that maybe Johnson & Johnson is the first one available to you, but you decline that because you want to wait for one of the others. You know, we encourage Delawareans to be aware, but my strongest recommendation is they're all great. So get the first vaccine that's available to you.
And again, the most important thing is that part about 100% effects. I used to be able to say that word. Say it for me, would you?
Effectiveness.
I'll use that.
Efficacy.
That was the one I was going for. Okay. So, but really it's 100% effectiveness against hospitalizations and death that is really key here. We don't want to crowd everybody out in those hospitals, and we sure don't want anyone to die.
Absolutely. I mean, that's first and foremost, we have lost over 1,400 Delawareans. I mean, that's an astonishing number. Our worst flu season ever, we lost 38 Delawareans. The number of deaths in our state is just astonishing. And so to end the heartbreak of losing Delawareans, you know, the sooner we can get more people vaccinated, the quicker we can stop these losses.
When you say 1,400, and we are running out of time here, does that take into account, too, the people who avoided health care or didn't go and seek treatment during this past year out of fear of the virus and visiting a doctor or hospital setting?
Yeah. So when we look at our numbers, we're looking at individuals who have died because of COVID-19. Now that they may have another underlying condition that put them at risk. But these are we're only counting the number who have where COVID-19 was listed as a cause of their death.
As I said, we are running out of time. So do you want to take us home and teach us our lesson? What should we be taking away from our conversation today?
Yeah, well, you know, I mean, this has been the craziest and most difficult of years for so many people. And I think we've all been just like hoping, praying for, you know, to get to that light at the end of the tunnel. And I hope that we all can continue to have patience and caution around continuing to do those strategies like mask wearing and social distancing, and also, you know, understand that we're going to get vaccine rolled out to our populations as quickly as we possibly can. But also, when your opportunity comes for vaccination, we truly hope that you take advantage of it.
I'm going to. Okay, that's great. And so I want to throw in one more question that I didn't ask. And if I can fit it in, I'd like to do that. And I said, you know, there are so many myths about the vaccines. And I alluded to people who they might actually have it when they get it. And then they go, oh, I caught it because I took it. Or, oh, I'm having all these symptoms from the second one. Are you having trouble separating the myth and the truth from people who, when they are faced with a decision? Yeah, I can get it, but I don't want it.
Yeah, absolutely. And we know that on, you know, the internet, social media, there's some myths that are flying around that aren't helping the situation at all. These vaccines are extremely safe, and they are not going to cause COVID-19. There's no possible way the vaccine itself can cause COVID-19. It's not a virus. It's particles that stimulate your immune system against the virus, but the vaccine cannot cause COVID-19. But side effects are not uncommon. About 70% of people get a sore arm afterwards. So just expect it. And that actually means that at the site of where you got the injection, you're having an immune reaction, which is great. So, you know, when you get that sore arm, think of that as a great sign that your immune system is, you know, preparing to protect you against COVID-19. Now, some people feel a little under the weather after the first shot. More people do feel a little under the weather after the second shot. So just expect it. I tell people now, you know, when you get your second shot, plan it as best as possible. So maybe the next day you can have a Netflix binging day. And, you know, if you get a low grade fever, if you feel tired, if you feel like you have a little bit of a headache or aches, that's normal. Again, it's just your body saying we're responding to this vaccine and it's a good thing. So don't worry about it, but just expect it might happen. And that really helps, I think, when people have the right expectations.
Okay. All right. Is there anything I missed? Was there anything you wanted me to ask?
No, but I'm glad you asked that last one. It's so important.
Okay. We got it. And then, okay. Nothing else?
Not that I can think of.
Well, just another reason to be proactive and come back. because everything else has been going on. It's not just a world of COVID out there. So, okay. Words to live by. Keep your guard up until we are free and clear of all of this and we've all been vaccinated and et cetera. So I want to say thank you then to Dr. Carol Thomas-Ratté. She is director of the Delaware Division of Public Health. Thanks again.
Thank you so much for having me. It's a pleasure.
And of course, for more information, go to coronavirus.delaware.gov. I'm Laura Lewis. This has been Focus on the Delaware Valley.